Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Why is it important that you be happy as a teen, or you do whatever you can to help your teenage children be happy? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is June 11th, 2013. We're on day two of our psychology article, Happiness May Bring You More Money. You can find it on pages 22 and 23 in your Advanced magazine. And it's an interesting topic. Money, of course, is probably one of the top three items that is floating around people's brains most of the day. And maybe love is the other one, and I'm not sure what the other one is.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Work, maybe. I had breakfast, lunch, dinner, ice cream, right? But certainly, money is always there, and you've got to find a way to get your hands around this concept so that it doesn't overtake you, doesn't dominate your life. And how can I be happy regardless of the money that I have coming in each month? Now, certainly you want enough money to survive, but how do I not let this thing dominate my life? But also, you know, of course, how do I earn more? People want to earn more. Well, we're finding out here it starts early. It starts with happy teenagers, right, Naomi?
That's true. This is a really fascinating study that has been explaining that the happier you are as a teenager, the more likely you are to be successful later in life. And when I hear this, that being happy could bring you money rather than money making you happy, one of the things I think about is career choices. You know, young people sometimes feel pressure to pursue a certain career that they're not interested in at all because their families are worried. They think, we need to make sure you make enough money. You need to be able to support us. Well, this makes it sound like maybe pursuing something that you really enjoy would actually pay off.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people, a lot of teenagers I see that are, you know, just, I don't know, if they're maybe forced into certain things that they really aren't interested in. And this can actually contribute some of that depression as far as, and part of it is, okay, one, they may not like what they're being forced into. The other thing is they don't really understand it.
Sure.
They don't understand what's going on. Why are you suggesting this? Strongly suggesting that I go into this. And so it comes down to a communication issue between parents and teenagers.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad to encourage kids to try something that's a little out of their comfort zone, you know, to help them try new things and explore life. But, you know, I'm very thankful that my parents were very supportive of the things that I enjoyed doing and didn't enjoy doing. I think it did make me a happier person.
Josh Mooney's here, back in the house.
I'm here, and I am satisfied with my life.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because you had mentioned as a teenager you weren't always very happy.
That's right. I think some of it was hormones, you know, the things floating through your body that impact your moods. And I think an unhappiness with my physical appearance was a big part of my teenage years. A lot of my friends grew up faster and stronger and quicker than I did. And as a big fan of sports, I think that was a tough thing for me as a kid to accept my diminutive status.
Diminutive.
Rather short.
Okay. Now, one thing we had talked about before the program today was about this, you know, the teenage years. And actually, the teenage years covers a broad range. We're talking 13 to 19, you know, if we're saying teens.
That's right. Starting junior high school and then, at least in America, in the middle of your college years.
And who you are as a 13 or 14-year-old is completely different from who you might be as a 16-year-old or an 18 or 19-year-old, right?
That's right. Physically, your status in life, whether you have a job or education, very, very different periods.
Right. But I think it's important to note that in this study, they did focus beginning at the age of 16 and then 16, 18, 22. And so to me, those years, I would say for most of us, the development has sort of evened out a little bit. You're not sort of shooting up or changing in such drastic ways by that point. You're sort of starting to become more yourself. So I think it's significant that they didn't pick the ages of, say, 13, 15, and 17 instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, what we talked about yesterday was a study that was done. It was actually published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and they actually examined the profiles of more than 10,000 young Americans, and that is where we're picking up today. We're talking more about the background of this study to understand it and also the impact it has on people's lives as they grow up into and through adulthood. So turn to page 23 in your magazine, and we'll have our first reading. It'll be the first section there over on the left column on page 23.
The paper was a longitudinal study and not an experiment, so it's not entirely clear whether happiness truly caused the higher earnings. But the study did show that happier teens were more likely to get a college degree, to get hired and promoted, and to be optimistic, extroverted, and less neurotic. Early happiness probably changes so many things about your life that even if later in life you're not as happy as you were, those formative experiences continue to play themselves out, said Michael Norton, co-author of the book Happy Money, The Science of Smarter Spending. How much is happiness motivating people to do better, and how much is it simply causing others to give us more opportunities? In other words, can unhappy people fake it until they make it? I would bet they would get some of the benefits, social psychologist and author Sonia Lyubomirsky said. Still, she said, most of the value of happiness probably comes from how it affects the person feeling it, not what others perceive.
Okay, we're talking about this study, and we say the paper was a longitudinal study and not an experiment.
Right. When you conduct an experiment, it means you see direct results that are very clearly related to a specific thing that you do. And so the results of an experiment tend to be very, very clear, very black and white. But this paper is a longitudinal study, meaning it was done over a long period of time. And so even though we learned yesterday that the researchers did try to control for many factors that could influence the results, it's still a little hard to say exactly how accurate this information is.
Yeah, because after the comma there in the second line, we see, so it's not entirely clear whether happiness truly caused the higher earnings.
That's right. There's not a direct correlation, but there's interesting proof. It says what the study did show was that happier teens were more likely to achieve some pretty interesting things later in life, and they list them there at line five, starting with a college degree.
Okay, getting a college degree. Now, we have to keep in mind there are different rates of graduation when it comes to university education around the world. They're, I would say here in Taipei and the surrounding areas, it's almost an extreme number relative to the rest of the world. We're talking about maybe 95% of the high school students going on to universities. I'm not quite sure what the percentage is of people that do get degrees. However, when you go look at, for instance, the United States, that number is much lower as far as the general population. It's probably, I think it's 50% or less than 50%, and other countries have very different rates. So while in one area, for instance, like in Taipei, we might assume getting a college degree is guaranteed, that's not the case.
Right. Now, the point is that we're comparing that this is something some people did and some people didn't do. So in another country, you might compare getting a master's degree. But in some countries, you might just say finishing high school, you know, because each society works a little differently. But in North America, getting your college degree is a fairly good indication of whether you've pursued a reasonable amount of education.
Very good. Reasonable amount of education. And the next one?
Well, to get hired and promoted. So this means that they got a job, and in that job, they moved up the career ladder.
Okay, getting just simply getting hired. today for many college graduates is an accomplishment because of the difficult market that they're trying to get hired into. And also then to be optimistic.
Right. They were also more likely to be optimistic, extroverted, and less neurotic. So these things all have more to do with your psychology and your personality. Optimistic, meaning you look at the positive side in things. Extroverted means that you are outgoing, not too shy. And finally, less neurotic. If someone is very neurotic, it means they tend to be very anxious and worried, and often they let kind of strange things scare them or defeat them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. They become distracted by a lot of things, and actually they may have social skills as far as some problems.
I think of Woody Allen when I think of neurotic people. That was the character he's played in many of his movies.
Yeah, you notice that just a small thing that most people would say, it doesn't matter, really bothers him, and he just obsesses over it for ages. And we all know people who have these tendencies. I think everyone can be a little bit neurotic about certain things, but certain people do just have more neurotic tendencies.
Okay, as we continue, we see a quote from Michael Norton, and what does he say?
Well, he says that early happiness probably changes so many things about your life that even if later in life you're not as happy as you were, those formative experiences continue to play themselves out.
Okay, now that's quite a statement there, but you know, he's saying if you're happy early on, that can change things, make things better for you. And it has an impact later.
Yeah, he's saying that being happy when you're young is more important than being happy when you're older. He basically seems to think that happiness early in life can actually have an effect that's very lasting. It sort of resonates or echoes through the rest of your life. Whereas if you're unhappy in those early years, even if good things happen later, you still get that sort of you kind of come back to those early moments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, it uses this term formative experiences.
Right. Those are periods of your life that impact the future, that are important, say, in building the foundation and shape who you're going to be in the future.
If you think about this in the more negative way, then I think for me, one of the things I have as a personal example is that my parents got divorced when I was a teenager. Now, that will resonate. It will keep coming up. Of course, it's natural. So maybe I feel okay afterwards, but then I start dating someone and then it comes back, you know, and then maybe I have a child or maybe I have a fight with one of my parents. And again, the effect comes back. And so that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. The negative stuff or the positive stuff can carry over.
And when you're saying comes back, that's what he means by this term, play themselves out. So when something plays themselves out, if something keeps happening and you see it again, and maybe another year will pass and then see it again. So it plays itself out that way.
Right. So if your parents were always supportive, then every time you try something new, you kind of have that echo of how supportive they were coming back to you.
That is a quote from Michael Norton, a co-author of the book Happy Money, The Science of Smarter Spending. Smarter spending. We could do a 3-day article here on Advanced just on smarter spending. That's for another day. Now, as we continue in the next paragraph.
Well, it says that how much is happiness motivating people to do better? And how much is it simply causing others to give us more opportunities? A good question.
Okay. All right. So what comes first here, right? The chicken or the egg? The happiness or opportunity? Or the opportunity, then happiness. What is coming first?
Right. The question, in other words, is if I'm not that happy, can I make people think I am?
Mm. Yeah.
And still get the benefits.
All right. So we continue by saying, in other words,
can unhappy people fake it until they make it?
Fake it until you make it.
Yeah, an interesting phrase. It's an idiom saying that if you just smile and push through and show everyone that you're happy, eventually it'll come around and you will feel happy. So almost acting before you feel it.
Immediately, I think this is a bit dangerous, okay? Because the problem is sometimes acting happy when you're not is a form of denial. Right. And that means maybe there's something serious going on in your life and you're just not really dealing with it. You're not being honest with yourself. However, at the same time, it is true that sometimes you can fake it until you make it. Things like being confident. Sometimes the more confident you act, the more confident you start to feel. And so to me, this one is a little bit tricky, but there's something to it. And the social psychologist and author Sonia Lyubomirsky agrees.
Okay. And she starts out by saying here in line 18.
Well, that I bet, she says, they would get some of the benefits. Some of the benefits of being happy would be a result in their life, say opportunities or a better job or a promotion, even if in their heart they weren't happy.
Okay. All right. So she says, maybe get some benefit out of this as far as faking it until you make it. But then she goes and says, still in line 20.
Most of the value of happiness probably comes from how it affects the person feeling it and not what others perceive. So what others perceive is, you know, maybe I have a big smile on my face and they think, oh, she seems so cheerful. But ultimately, most of these results still come from what's on the inside, how I really feel when I wake up and how I really feel when I take on a new task.
Mm. Okay. You know, this faking it until you make it thing, you said it's a fine line. Mm-hmm. It can be good or it can not be good, and it's very close. And I would say where it's not good is that where you might ask people, how are you doing? And they've got lots of problems, and they just say, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. That's really not good. Whereas the faking it until you make it, you realize there's a challenge. You're a little bit scared. You're a little bit afraid, but you don't act afraid. You don't act scared, and you don't let it intimidate you. You say, well, I'm going to move forward regardless.
Right.
Yeah. Of how I feel.
I think it comes down to being honest with yourself about how you feel and then moving on from there. So if I say, you know, oh, I don't feel very secure. Mm-hmm. However, I know that about myself and I'm going to try to act secure. Then that's okay because you are still being clear with yourself about where your emotions are.
Did you ever fake it until you made it, Josh?
Oh, sure. I'm doing that right now. Don't I seem like a confident English teacher, Bill?
I'm thinking of job interviews. Not only job interviews, but that's just the first thing that – and you do sound like a confident English teacher.
Oh, thank you.
But I just was thinking of job interviews. For instance, you had to kind of fake it till you made it in a job interview, right?
That's right. If you've, especially if you're going for or trying out for something you've never done before, you want to seem like you belong there. And so much of that is your attitude.
Yeah. You want to go in and say, oh, yeah, sure, I can do that. I had experience doing X, Y, Z, and I have no problem adapting. And
right. I remember I got my first job as a manager, and I was only 19, and some of my employees were, you know, 40-something. And so in that situation, I had to be honest with myself that I had a lot to learn, and I had to be honest with my supervisors that I didn't have all the answers. But around my employees, I couldn't just say, oh, I don't know. I guess try it this way. I had to come across as someone who was still in control of the situation.
Right. Yeah. Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different today, and we're going to stick our feature in right now.
This is the gloomiest day ever. It's raining, work was hard, and I have no money.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad. At least the country hasn't gone over the fiscal cliff yet.
Yeah, I guess so. My budget has declined so much. I can't buy the new gadgets everyone else has. I need more money.
Sometimes you just need to be a little simple-minded and enjoy life. It's not all about the money. Stop and smell the roses.
All right, all right. You sound like my mother. Honey, don't be so doleful. Turn that frown upside down and have a good attitude.
Well, it sounds like your mother was a smart lady. And research proves it. Happier people can make more money later in life.
Really? Well, if that's true, I should change my attitude. If I am happier, I can get a better job.
And when you have a better job and you're happy with your job, you could make more money someday.
Thanks, Jess. I feel better now. Let's go do something fun.
Okay, we have a sidebar there on page 23. If you look at right in the middle there of the right column, predisposed to happiness. What's it say, Josh?
It says it's kind of like losing weight, says Sonia Lyubomirsky, a University of California Riverside social psychologist and author of The How of Happiness, who was not involved in the study. If you're genetically predisposed to not being a happy person, you have to put a lot of effort into it.
Okay. So this means a little bit more of what she just talked about, faking it until you're making it, pushing yourself.
Right. And it's important to consider, you know, just as with losing weight, some people naturally just have this wonderful metabolism where they can eat anything they want and exercise just a little bit and they look terrific.
I hate those people.
Yeah, other people have to work pretty hard at it. In the same way, some people are genetically predisposed to depression, for example.
Yep.
And so some people just are more likely to have more down days, more sad times in their life where it's harder for them to get out of bed, it's harder for them to face the day and to feel good about it. So for those people, that doesn't mean there's no hope, okay? But you do have to really work it like a muscle and say, I'm going to choose to try to see this day in a great way. It could also mean taking medication or seeing a psychologist, you know, doing the different things that people do to make sure that you are as balanced and happy in your life as possible.
Okay. All right, let's do this. Let's get into our second reading for today.
Possible global implications. The study results may even have policy implications for central banks and political leaders looking to take lagging American and European economies out of their recent downturns, said lead author Jan-Emmanuel Deneve, an assistant professor of political economy and behavioral science at University College London. Previous research by Deneve's co-author, economics professor Andrew Oswald of the University of Warwick in England, has suggested that low unemployment makes people happier than low inflation. Perhaps if governments focused on stimulating job growth, even if those measures boosted inflation, they would lead to greater happiness, and thus more prosperity overall, Deneve mused. A little individual happiness, spread over entire populations, could have a massive combined effect, perhaps pulling depressed economies out of their slumps.
Okay, Bill Quinn here with Naomi Beeshavel and Josh Mooney. We're in our last section of Happiness May Bring You More Money. And now we're moving into a bigger picture, a bigger landscape. We've been talking about the happiness of teens impacting their earning potential in the early part of their career and throughout their career. Now we're talking about possible global implications.
I love this because to me, this is the kind of article where maybe up till now you're going, well, I was a happy teen and I'm doing fine. Or maybe you're thinking, well, my kids are doing great. They're happy. They're well adjusted. Everyone's doing fine. So this article doesn't matter. It doesn't apply to me. Well, you would be wrong.
Well, it, you know, and it can impact all of us because it impacts the greater numbers of people all around the world. Study results may even have policy implications for central banks and political leaders around the world. Implications.
That's right. Implications are effects that a decision has on the future. And in this case, when we take it global, it means impacts everyone in the world. And the central banks and political leaders are looking to take the lagging and American-European economies out of their recent downturns, according to the lead author, Jan-Emmanuel Deneve.
Okay. Lagging would be, we mean sluggish, a little slow moving.
Yes. If you're running a race or a marathon and someone is lagging behind, it would probably be me. They're the person who can't keep up with everyone else. And so here those economies are lagging. They're kind of out of breath. They're not where they should be.
Okay. So, and this idea comes from lead author Jan-Emmanuel Deneve, an assistant professor of political economy and behavioral science at University College in London. Now, I'm assuming he was the lead author on this study or, you know.
That's what it says, lead author. And so as we continue at the top of the next column, we see that previous research by Deneve's co-author, so the other person who was helping with this study, that's economics professor Andrew Oswald, also in England, has suggested that low unemployment makes people happier than low inflation.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting study there that says that perhaps if we all had jobs, we would be happier even if we were paying higher prices for all the goods and services we buy.
Well, and this is significant because unemployment is a huge problem in Europe and America right now. Unemployment, you know, in Europe, in some of the countries is up near 20-25%, particularly for young people. So they continue by saying in line five, maybe giving some advice to some of the governments.
Right. They're saying, well, maybe if those governments could focus on stimulating job growth, that would lead to greater happiness. Now, stimulating job growth means that they're doing something to start more jobs being available, more employment opportunities, maybe more promotions, more positions, etc.
It says even if those measures of stimulating growth boosted inflation, which is what the central bank and policy leaders in countries around the world fear the most, that if we stimulate the economy too much, that prices will skyrocket and inflation will be out of control. And so the authors here are stating maybe that shouldn't be such a big fear, that people will still spend money happily if they have jobs and money to spend it with.
I think generally in the last 5 years or so, the rate of inflation in Europe and the United States and even in Asia has been about 5%, somewhere hovering around 5%. But there have been times where it's been 10 or 15%.
Right? That's right. Early 80s. Remember, gas in America was through the roof because inflation was at 17 to 20% a year.
Okay. So they have to kind of pick a balance here. These guys are saying add jobs. Don't worry so much about inflation, because that would lead to what?
Well, first of all, greater happiness, but that greater happiness would also lead to more prosperity overall. In other words, more people would be doing better. There would be a greater improvement in the big picture of how people are doing. According to Deneb, it says he mused. That just means he's sort of thinking out loud. He said, what if we tried this? Imagine what could happen.
All right. And what might happen if there was a little individual happiness?
Well, it says that spread out over entire populations could have a massive combined effect. Global happiness epidemic could occur.
And perhaps so positive.
Right.
We need a global happiness epidemic. Well, I could see that where the attitudes of people would improve, people become optimistic, and then it does have an impact.
Right. And the impact, according to this, the final part of the sentence, perhaps pulling depressed economies out of their slumps. So you can just picture all those dollar signs kind of lying in a heap at the bottom of a pit. And they're saying, no, if everyone's happier and they're all working, even if we're spending more money, everyone would be doing better.
Okay. Everyone would be doing better. I like that. But let's do this. Let's just focus on the one person, the teen in your life, or maybe if you are a teenager yourself. And let's try and figure out how to be happier today. And don't just look at life as drudgery, but look at, hey, what is going to, you know, be something I can really look forward to and strive towards, and I will enjoy doing it. And don't just approach it as, oh, I have to do it. But pick something that really you enjoy and make yourself happy. It will pay off for you in the long run, not just in income, but also in life satisfaction and contentment. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And thank you, Josh and Naomi. We'll see everybody next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.